I am so excited to be joined today by Michael Fulweiler. He is huge in this space. He has been helping out therapists market their practices for years upon years at this point, worked with some really, really cool organizations. But Michael, if you can introduce yourself for listeners.
Thank you, Chrissy, so much for having me. I started my career at the Gottman Institute. I had the opportunity to work with Dr. John and Julie Gottman and run marketing there for almost 10 years, which was such an amazing experience for me. And really since 2020, I've been consulting with private practices, both solo and group practices, as well as tech companies in the mental health space, really helping them to grow their businesses, specifically through content and brand marketing, which I'm happy to talk more about, as well as more recently, I've been working with therapists who are also content creators to help them partner with brands that feel aligned with them and their values.
I know that there has been a lot of conversation around, can therapists be influencers? I think that's kicked up even more recently. But I would love to get into today why, in your experience, how you've seen it work, maybe how you have seen it not work, and really how to show up as a content creator, as an influencer, if you will, as a therapist, how to do it well, how to actually maybe make money off of it, because it's really tiring to put out content and content and content and maybe not get as much back. But yeah, I would love to hear more from you about that.
Hey there, I'm Christy Plantica, and I'm the founder of Place Digital, a boutique marketing agency for therapists. This is Practice Marketing Insider. Each week, I examine one piece of outdated or overblown marketing advice for therapists and explain why it's inaccurate and what you should be doing instead.
Yeah, so there was this trending Instagram reel format recently that I saw. It was therapists posting, it's like, why are therapists trying to be influencers? And then the response was, because there's influencers who are trying to be therapists, or they're acting like therapists online, right?
Yeah.
And so there are already people out there who have, not to name names, but, who are providing psychoeducation through content on social media that may or may not be true. There's a lot of misinformation out there about mental health. I think a lot of mental health concepts tend to be oversimplified through social media content. And so in a way, I believe actually therapists have somewhat of a responsibility to be out there, educating people, because they do have the expertise to share. So I actually think my perspective, and I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I think the more therapists who are out there sharing information that's accurate, the better.
Yeah, I never thought about it as a responsibility. It really is. I mean, you hear story after story of X person wrote a book and they're just knocking off really some actual therapist's IP, really, like the way that they approach a certain problem. So what are some ways that you've seen this maybe done not so well? We can start there. And we're not here to name names or anything, but ways that you've seen it done where maybe you don't agree from a marketing perspective. You're like, I don't think that's very strategic, or maybe, again, we're not therapists, so the ethical side of things we'll leave up to them, but maybe things that kind of fell off.
I think the big one is breaking confidentiality. So anytime a therapist goes on Instagram or on TikTok and talks about a recent session they had, anything that if a client saw, they could identify as themselves, that's not okay. If a therapist is going to be creating content and showing up in those spaces, they need to make sure that they're protecting confidentiality of their clients. So like, that's a big one, I would say, that comes to mind. Self-disclosure is another one, right? I believe that it is helpful for therapists to self-disclose. I think it can make them more relatable and accessible to not just their clients, but anyone who is consuming their content. But again, are we ethically self-disclosing, or are we oversharing? And so making sure that we're being smart about that as well, that is often a gray area. And, sometimes like someone might step too far, and it's important to listen to feedback when that happens. The way that I've heard it described from therapists is like, if a client were to see your content, how would they feel?
And how would you feel?
You would share? Yeah. And how would you share this? Would you share this with a client or not? And if not, it's probably something that you shouldn't be sharing online.
Yeah, I can imagine being someone's client and seeing something that, first of all, if it's about you, even though the internet wouldn't know it's about you technically, unless if, the therapist was just dropping your personal details, which I don't think would happen in any world, but that would be an absolutely terrible feeling. But I also imagine as anyone who kind of has overshared, like we've all done it, right? And then to do it like online as a therapist, that probably wouldn't feel great anyways. So,
and I've talked to therapists about this, and the therapists who are content creators and who are influencers, it's part of their informed consent that they talk to their clients about and say, hey, I'm also a content creator. You may see my content online. Here's what to do about it. If something that you see makes you feel uncomfortable, bring it up. Let's talk about it. Like that can be an opportunity for connection between the client and therapist. I've seen therapists talk about like, this is what I'm seeing lately in my sessions. And it's like themes from their clients. And to me, that feels okay. As long as it's not personally identifiable. I think if your therapist is also a content creator, it would be hard not to see yourself in their content. So I think it's probably part of like, if you're going to be a client of a therapist who's visible online, that's probably something that just is part of working with that therapist. And then also something else that we should talk about here, right, is like, if you are a therapist who is a content creator, who is an influencer, who is seeing clients, how to handle if those clients interact with you, if they follow you, what is your process there, right? Making sure that we're not entering into a dual relationship with clients through social media. And so having really good boundaries there is also important.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I mean, I remember once back in my hometown, I saw my therapist in a grocery store and she actually hadn't seen me for a couple of years. I was like, she was booked and busy. I was like, she probably forgot about me at this point, you know, but it's the same kind of thing where it's like someone gets a review on their Google business and it's from a client. And it kind of depends on your state board and stuff. But a lot of therapists say, I can't respond to it, good or bad. Like, I can't acknowledge that they're even my client. And I imagine with social media that, yeah, that's obviously playing out there as well.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, if the client engages, it's okay, but the therapist really can't engage back, right? And so for therapists who are listening, if a client is messaging you on Instagram, right, like the sort of best practice would be just not to respond, or you could respond and say, hey, we'll talk about this in session, or you bring it up in your next session, right? But it's important that you're not engaging with clients outside of session. It would be the same thing with email or text, right? It's like those conversations should happen in session.
What are some ways that you've seen this done really well? And I do want to get into how kind of brand deals start. I think it's a very kind of elusive process of how you start a partnership like that. But first, I'd love to see, are there any content creators you have in mind that you think are just towing this line really well? What are they doing that you think works well from a marketing perspective? So, you know, they're getting follows, they have really good engagement with their followers, but also, yeah, just from like an ethical therapist standpoint.
Yeah, I mentioned self-disclosure. I think that that can be really helpful in connecting with your audience. Someone who comes to mind is my friend Patrick Casal. So he's from All Things Private Practice. He's great. And he's just very open about his own experience. He was diagnosed with autism as an adult. He has ADHD. He used to have a gambling addiction. Like, he just talks openly about these things and he creates content about it. He just gave a TED talk about a like late in life autism diagnosis. And he's really created this whole content niche around his own lived experience. And it's content that people really resonate with. There's another therapist that I follow who I really like, Lauren Larkin. She's on Instagram and TikTok. She's great. She went through an eating disorder, something that she went to treatment for. She is now a therapist and helps folks with eating disorders. And she talks about it. She's very open about it and her experience, and her content touches on it. And, you know, she's not like oversharing by any means, but just two examples of people who are able to talk about their experience in a way to connect with their audience, to build that trust kind of without oversharing, if that makes sense. So, and then I think in terms of brand deals and, you know, sponsorships, which is something that I have started to help therapists with, I think really going back to finding brands that feel really aligned. For someone who has been on the brand side and has worked with creators, we would look for therapists who have an aligned audience and an aligned kind of content niches as us. So, for example, when I was at Herd, her does bookkeeping, taxes, accounting for therapists. So if there's therapists who are talking about money and finances in their content, that feels very aligned with our brand and our content. So those are the types of creators that we would look to partner with. Lindsay, Brian Podman, right? He's talking about money. So these types of folks who there's an alignment, not just in the content, but also in their values, the way they show up. And so it's the same way for creators as well, like looking for companies that feel aligned, talk about some of the same things, share a similar audience, right? Because brands are going to want to reach your audience if it's also in their target market.
And these brands, especially if your audience is more just kind of therapy seekers, therapy curious people,
yeah.
I imagine that the brands could be any, you know, a very wide array of different things, from health and wellness to more wellness tools, whether it's a meditation app, financial wellness tools. But where do people even start with that? I've only done it once myself through the What Your Therapist Thinks podcast. Cozy Earth has been our sponsor, and they reached out to us, which is super cool. They've been great to work with so far. But I know there are kind of those influencer agencies. You kind of have an agent who's brokering these deals on your behalf. If someone is interested in, hey, I want to try this out, I want to try to get a brand deal, where does a therapist even begin?
Sure. So I would start with the brands, the software, like the companies that you're already using, whether it's personally or professionally, because as like a customer, that's like a great place to start. And you could just create content about that brand and how you, for example, like you use Herd in your practice. Like therapists would post about Herd organically, and that would get our attention. Like, oh, wow, this is great. This is a therapist who's using Herd already. They're already talking about it. They posted about us. Let's connect with them and maybe do something more formal together. So I think that's a way to kind of get their attention. Or just also you could reach out and say, hey, I'm a customer. I love using Gusto in my practice for my payroll. Would love to explore partnership opportunities. Those are both sort of more business focused examples. But I think about other brands that are more mental health aligned. Maybe it's like a meditation app, or I've seen therapists post about Brick recently, which is like a...
I almost like got them, by the way.
So you can't, yeah.
I did like exactly what you said, where I was visiting my friends who just had a baby, and they were like, we've just been, you know, trying to be really present, and they would do the little Brick with their phone. And I was like, this is so cool. How have I not heard about this? So I reached out to them. I found someone's email and was just like, I'm amazed by your product. And I know that our listeners value this sort of thing too. And we were having a conversation and stuff. But yeah, I love, because it's like a product, but it's also, Brick is super cool. They are not sponsoring this podcast, but definitely check them out.
You should, Brick, if you're listening.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I would say like start with companies, products, brands that you already use. Going back to authenticity, I think that for influencers, once you reach a level of getting like pitched brand deals or companies want to partner with you, it just is very clear when someone is being paid to talk about something versus if they actually use it and love it. And so that comes through in the content. And so I would say the more effective sponsor content, you can just tell that the person is like actually using it.
Yeah, there's the authenticity piece, which I think for therapists, you know, for better or worse, we have such a high standard for how therapists show up. And I think online, that authenticity is a piece of that because, you know, we can see different influencers, who reach this level and they're like, yeah, sure, I'll partner with XYZ. You could tell their heart isn't in it. And that's kind of like, it's a turnoff a bit, I think, for any of their followers. But then with the therapist too, if I was a client, I really would want to see, I think, that level of authenticity with that. And I just think therapists, they're just under more of a microscope, which, again, for better or worse.
Yeah. And I think that that is a concern that therapists have. I've built trust with my audience. If I start partnering with brands and I start, you know, posting ads or sponsor content, is it going to look like I'm selling out? And I think it's the opposite. I think there are certain brands that if you do partner with, that the perception is, oh, this person is just taking money. But if it feels aligned, right, I see the comments when these creators are kind of up and coming and they're building a following, and then they get their first brand deal or brand partnership, and everyone in the comments is like so excited for them. People like to see people that they like be successful. I guess I would encourage folks not to worry so much about that, as long as the brand that they're partnering with feels in alignment with their values.
I imagine part of why it's really difficult to show up as a content creator, as an influencer, as a therapist, is it doesn't feel like people are always rooting for you, because I think a lot of therapists do have mixed feelings about it as a profession, a side gig, whatever. So I imagine as a therapist, it would be hard knowing that probably not all therapists are rooting for you. And again, that's not your problem. Like, that's their own shit to deal with.
Yeah.
But I imagine having that kind of secondary audience as a therapist would be really difficult too.
Something that is not talked about as much is, as soon as you're more in the public eye, as soon as you start to build an audience, there's also this downside that you don't really realize. And it's that when you have content that, say, maybe you have a viral post or you just start to get more followers, there's going to be negative attention as well. And so kind of anytime you're in the like town square, right? Like, there's going to be people that are cheering you on and there's going to be people that aren't. And so that's something that I've had to learn, you know, as someone who's built an audience, is like, I've had some of that negative attention as well. And I've talked to other creators and it's hard. You know, it's like you do something or say something, maybe in not the best way, and people want to cancel you for it. And that's just, I think it comes with it. Being more visible also comes with more negative attention as well. And so I think that that's something that is important to understand if you're going to go down that path, that it's like not all positive. And I think it's important to have boundaries in place. You know, maybe it's that you just don't read the comments, or maybe you don't respond and engage with people who are not engaging in good faith. Or maybe if people are just trolling you, you just delete their comments or you block them, right? So I think it's easy to go down a rabbit hole when something like that does happen. And so I think it's just important to keep that in mind.
And I think the irony is, from a marketing perspective, what these algorithms pick up are the spicy takes.
True.
Right? The stuff that makes people stop scrolling, that makes them think, that makes them agree, that makes them disagree. So I think that's part of it too. When you are engaging more in the influencer world, you just have to be playing into the algorithms, or else you're just not going to be very effective. You know, like, you can do it as, you know, however is in line with your values as you can, but there are just certain things that these algorithms value more, and a lot of that stuff is going to be controversial. Controversial content performs better. So towing that line as a therapist, being aware that this might get negative attention. I've heard a lot of stories like that from therapists where something they made went viral because it was a little bit more like that. Then they heard about it in their comments and their DMs.
Yeah, in my experience, when you do have a post that goes viral, and to me, viral is like, it sort of gets beyond your immediate sphere of followers, where it's now it's like kind of out there and you're starting to get attention and comments, and it gets weird. People also just, I don't know what it is, like when they see a post on their feed for maybe someone they're not following, I think there's like rage bait is also a thing where people would just troll and say things to get a reaction out of people. My sort of take on that is just ignore that. I've talked to therapists who have said that they'll post something, maybe they'll spend 5 or 10 minutes engaging with comments on the post, and then they'll just never look at it again.
Or I love that.
I've also had therapists tell me they have friends or people who, you know, they'll ask, hey, like, if you see me responding to people or going down this rabbit hole, just tell me. So have people kind of keep you in check, or, hey, remind you, hey, like, let's stop doing that. So that kind of support can be helpful as well.
Yeah, almost having policies in place for yourself when it comes to how you show up, because truly no good comes of it. I mean, maybe you'll pick up a nugget or two, right?
Yeah.
Where, oh, that was, you know, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. But probably the benefit for the therapist isn't that great. Again, unless if they really did cross a line, and it's like, you got to own up to
it. Yeah, I think if you have a big audience, you're probably going to say something at some point that's going to offend somebody. That's inevitable. So you're going to probably take a misstep at some point. And so I think the important thing there is also to have the humility to be like, hey, you know, it's not that you're not reading any of the comments and feedback. It's like, hey, I hear you. I didn't say this in the best way. So there's also a place, I think, to acknowledge some of that as well. There's a lot of nuance, right? I think to me, it comes down to the intent of people who are engaging with you. Are they engaging in good faith? Are they engaging just to get a reaction? And if you really said something that was offensive and people are commenting and giving you feedback, I think it's important to listen.
What if you don't agree with the opinions? I've thought about that recently. If you get feedback from followers and they're kind of pointing something out that you can see where they're coming from, but you don't really agree. I don't know if you've ever worked with content creators who've had that, where they're getting all this feedback and they're like, I just don't agree. And so I'm not going to apologize for something that I'm not really sorry for.
Yeah. And then if you do, like if you apologize for something, then maybe you're upsetting another part of your audience that feels like you shouldn't have apologized. And so I don't think you're ever going to please anyone. I think to me, it comes back to just sticking true to your values and what you believe. And if you don't agree with what someone's saying, like you could acknowledge that their perspective is valid, but you just, you know, don't see it in the same way. And that's fine. I would say it's kind of within any relationship, right? Like as long as someone feels heard and understood, you don't necessarily have to agree with them.
Yeah. And that's the Gottman Institute experience.
It sure is. Yeah.
Well, this has been so interesting. I really feel like we could talk about this for hours. And I'm certainly not like super qualified to talk about this topic. It's not really my field. But yeah, like we've been saying, therapists just, there's more of a microscope on them. We just have higher standards for therapists. And that's tough because the whole influencer content creator thing is brand new. It is not an old field. So we're just kind of building the plane as we fly.
And something else I would say too is like, going back to upsetting people or people trying to cancel therapists who are influencers. Like a lot of what I see is like, I'm going to report you to the ethics board for something that you posted. And it's like, that's not really how it works, right? Like you can disagree with something that someone says, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they did anything that would violate their code of ethics. I do talk to therapists who also have that concern of, well, I'm just really worried about being a content creator and posting online because I don't want to put my license at risk. And it's important to understand what your code of ethics says and to stay in alignment with it. But just because you post something that someone disagrees with doesn't mean that they can report you to your ethics board. That's not a thing.
Yeah, lots of fear mongering around that, I think. And yeah. I don't know. I think the same thing with Google reviews is therapists are very afraid of getting that one star review. Right. But I think we need to give people that see that sort of thing more credit. And kind of like with an ethics board too, even though I take issue with, you know, some of the way that affects the marketing work I do for my clients, of course. Yeah. But we have to trust that people are going to, when they're not kind of swept up in the moment, you know, fiercely typing their comment on Instagram, they have this kind of outside perspective where they're like, this person sounds kind of pissed. It sounds like they took this really personally and actually, I don't know if I'm on the same side as this person. I see it in Google reviews all the time. Like you can tell when that person is just kind of upset unreasonably versus this is very valid criticism that they are giving about this therapist or practice. So I imagine that the ethics board, of course, would have the same thing. They're like, we're getting this more and more and we're not seeing that. So,
yeah, when you're a therapist and you're creating content about topics that might be upsetting for people, like you understand that people can project, right? And it's about them and it's not about you. And so I think that's an important perspective to keep as well.
This is such an interesting topic. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience. If anyone is interested in this sort of thing, if you are a content creator, you are a therapist, and you are looking into your first brand deal, reach out to Michael. And how else can people find you?
Thank you. Yeah, please do. I'm most active on LinkedIn these days, just Michael Fulweiler. I write a newsletter as well called Therapy Marketer. It goes out every week. If you just put in Therapy Marketer into Google, it should show up, or into your AI search of choice. And yeah, just, you know, send me an email. Would love to talk about ways that we could potentially partner.
Amazing. Thank you, Michael. And that's it for this week's episode. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or Instagram at Christy_placedigital. If you're interested in working with me and my team, you can head over to placedigital.com. I'm Christy Plantinga. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.